the pale horse. The man who sat on him was death. And hell followed with him.
You're killing me, man.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Declarations of War. I am your host, Alexei Avkard, joined by my faithful co-host, Artemis Albosa.
Howdy, howdy.
And we are members of NWAR, EU's premier small gang mercenary corporation, and we're bringing it back! And there are some uncultured swine on the forums attempting to shitpost upon our threads that the mercenary life is dead, but I am happy to report that we are alive and kicking, and as loyal fans of the show know, we've been that way for a while. The NWAR relaunch is actually going quite well. In fact, that is our top story for this podcast. We've had a number of contracts. We had kind of a bit of a dry patch around the holidays. Some of it was intentional. I wanted to focus on NWAR Academy, and of course, you know, people have actual holiday plans with families and things like that. And then we came back, and it was a little dry for a little bit. But in the past couple of weeks, things have really picked up for us.
And boy, has it been lucrative.
Indeed. Well, in addition, the backdrop to this is, since we've closed down our Academy US version, and we're gearing up for the Australian version, we've just had a number of just regular recruits coming in. A shout out to Feyrol for pumping us on the Less Than 10 podcast, and it's the word of mouth getting around that NWAR is back and that we're back in the biz. There things are going pretty well. Activity on the kill board is up. Activity in the corp is up. People are feeling good. And we're getting a lot of recruits. It's great. Which leads us.
Quality recruits, too, I must say.
Oh, yeah, for sure. These guys are definitely up to snuff, so to speak. Some of them have come out and made pretty big impacts. And some of them have excellent resumes, and they're just getting themselves moved out into our contract area, and we're really looking forward to seeing what they can bring to the table. We've got two contracts to talk with you about. The first is, I've got to say, as far as risk-reward, certainly our most lucrative contract to date. Definitely our most lucrative contract since the relaunch by a country mile. We saved a pair of high-sec Tataras. These are the large refineries. They're under attack by a corporation known as Heldon, which seems to be structure grinding in HISEC. I've had a number of inquiries about them over the past month or two. And finally got one where the price was right. So we came in. And it was... Normally when we get hired, it's like save our Astra House or save our Athenor. We'd never really been brought in to save such a large structure before. These are extremely expensive, particularly if you put money into them. So we were able to get a pretty good price for it, and we loaded up with our force multiplication fleet. It's a new thing that we're trying, where the focus is not so much on directly engaging the enemy with NWAR pilots, but in supporting the employer fleet and making sure they have a clear and easy path to victory. So that'll take.
So if you're a prospective client and you have a fleet of your own, rather than just adding on, say, let's say 10 NWAR F1 monkeys, right? Instead of having 10 DPS ships, you instead have us do force multiplication, where each one of our pilots multiplies the effectiveness of yours. So if you are a client and you have maybe 20 dudes in your fleet, and we show up with our 10 NWAR pilots in force multiplication ships, let's say lowballing it here, that increases the effectiveness of your pilots by 50%. Now, obviously, it's going to be greater than that or less than that, depending on what you're fighting and what we're flying. But then instead of your fleet going up by only 10, it's now going up by 20. Our 10 plus the 50% extra of your 20. So it's a really good value for the money.
And it can take different forms depending on how we're doing it. But generally speaking, to Artemis's point, adding in a bunch of F1 pilots, you could bring in people off the street to do that. You're not really adding tons of value. NWAR pilots are really highly skilled with a lot of specialization and combat experience. So what we do is put them in things like logistics, high-end tackle, high-end electronic warfare, depending on your needs, where your gaps are. So if you don't have enough dictors, we can supply dictors and tackle. If you don't have enough logi, we can come in and do that. If you're missing the electronic warfare needed to break up that enemy Leshak ball, we can do that. And in this case, that was the situation. We're in high sec. We didn't have the numbers to directly take on Heldon. The employers kind of did, but it was really on a knife's edge. They brought us in to even the score, give them that edge to come out on top. And, so we tailored our fleet to break up Heldon's fleet. We kind of knew what they would bring based on their kill board. We did all the research and tailored our ships to match and rolled on out. Now, the actual fight was disrupted by a lot of the server issues that Eve has been experiencing lately. Which, not to belabor the point, I'm sure everyone that's listening, if you haven't experienced it yourself, you know someone who has. The DDoS that's been affecting Eve has been crippling for a lot of groups. It was very disruptive for this one. Although all sides managed to get at least some pilots in and there was some skirmishing, neither side really wanted to commit fully to that fight. The defenders are more than willing. They were raring to go, as a matter of fact. It looked like Heldon might go for it, but didn't actually pull the trigger there. We had showed up on time, in place, in what we needed to be, with as many pilots as we could get online. And then we just kind of sat and waited. There was a lot of fainting. It looked for a minute like they would come out, but at the end of the day, the targets declined to commit to the field. Happy result for our employer, in that both of their structures were saved.
And happy result to us, in that we got a lot of ISK.
A lot of ISK, no losses. Definitely plus one for us. We're actually probably going to get more out of this because that war is ongoing. My understanding is both sides are still fighting each other. I am sure, considering that we're already in on the war deck, that we will probably make an appearance there at some point. This war seems like it's going on for quite a while. It's a multi-week war, which is fairly rare. I don't know if that's because Heldon has a personal issue with these guys, if they just really want to kill those Tataras and they're not going to stop till they do. I'm not certain. It's definitely rare. All the other structure defenses where we've been hired in, they have basically stopped the war as soon as the initial reinforce failed.
Yeah, I think it's because in most cases, that kill mail is the purpose. HiSec, it's very difficult to have combat outside of structure timers. And so if the attackers know that they aren't going to get anything out of that structure timer, they're probably just going to leave unless they're the trade hub camper type people.
Which begs the question, what does Heldon expect to get out of this situation? I don't know. We'll find out, I guess. The fight is ongoing. If there are any further developments, we will bring them to you on the next show. Our other contract kicked off just the day prior to this Tatara contract. A deployment into Nullsec. Our first, not just hit a structure, but actually go out to a Nullsec region and cause chaos type contract that Noir used to do so often in the past. This is really the first time that it's come up for us since we've relaunched the Corp, and I could not be more excited. We're heading up into Fade. That is our area of operation, and we've gotten a lot of great fights from the locals, including Drakaris, Ranger Regiment, and Darkness. Occasional appearances by Goonswarm and Test.
They are up to fight, man. Ranger Regiment, you decloak one bomber, and they will have 15 dudes camping the gate waiting for you to show up again. It is wonderful.
And they've got quite the attention span. We took a frigate Rome into their ratting pocket. They immediately formed up a 10 to 15 man fleet to camp a bubble out, so we couldn't leave. I had the fleet log off for about 45 minutes. When they came back on, sure enough, still there with about 8 to 10 guys. And in, heavy ships, too. Well, yeah, supported. I think they had 3 Lokis, 2 Simis, a Macariel, 3 Tornadoes, Dictors, a couple Frigs.
Their fast response go-to tends to be the Macariel, which I absolutely love.
Autocannon like, materials, too. It's quite rare to see in NullSec these days.
Mm-hmm. I'd say about 50 to 60% of the time, if you get scouted and they send a response loop for you, there's going to be a Macarial there.
And it kind of works, too, because it's well supported by these other support ships, so it can kind of be this small gang battering ram. It's kind of the ship you have to play around because of its speed and its power. But at the same time, with its supporters, it kind of prevents it from the few cases where you could really counter it, like heavy E-War and then getting close for a scram type thing. You got their Lokis webbing down the tackle, you've got their faster ships running down any kind of Falcon alts you might bring in. It's a really effective combo. We've had a number of engagements against them. Artemis, I think you had the first substantial one. Why don't you kick off?
Ooh, I need to look back at my kill board and see what was the first one.
Well, there have been skirmishes just about every day, but you had the big kill, the first big kill.
Ah, the first kill. Yeah, that was a fun one. It's actually my host highlight, so we'll spoil it, I guess, for you guys. So we had reinforced the jump bridge in O1Y, and it was coming out of its final timer at around 1330. Now, 1300 is like prime time for our opponents, prime time for the hostiles. And so we were expecting a fight. We went out there. Our fleet comp was, I was trying out a new fleet for myself personally. I quad box 90% of the time. And the fleet that I'm using is based on another dude who I forget his name. Feral introduced me to him. And what he did was he would triple box and fly a Kikimora and a remote tracking computer Bifrost as well as a scalpel to Repa 2. And I thought, wow, that sounds like a great idea. The remote tracking computers let your Kikimora hit out to 20 kilometers with Occult and out to 50 with Mystic. And you've got 800 DPS once you get ramped up with Occult. So it just nukes everything. With the links, you've got extra speed, you've got extra tank, and I just added a fourth scalpel. That way my scalpel itself could get repped. So everything in the fleet is getting constantly repped. I can swap the reps around if I can micromanage that during combat if I need to. Everything's fast enough that it can outrun a ram jag now that they've been nerfed, so that's pretty nice. And I just nuke scepters, so they're not really a big deal. The biggest concern for the fleet really is heavy projection. I think the one time I did lose the Kiki was to Macarials. They brought out like four or five of them. And with Barrage on their ACs, and they were going fast enough to not lose range to me too quickly, that they were able to nuke me down before I could warp out. Plus, you've got the MJD from the Bifrost as well. So if you're anchored tightly and appropriately and you do some things carefully, you can just MJD away if need be. But in any case, enough about the fleet comp itself. The fight, we had myself and my quad fleet, and then we also had five other bombers with us. Some of them multi-boxing, some of them single-boxing. So they had target painters and damps and things like that. So we're sitting there shooting this jump gate. It's worth noting that jump gates, when they get reinforced, they're flex structures. So you shoot both the shield and the armor at the same time, then they enter reinforce mode. There they enter low power mode, and also their service modules shut off because the armor is gone, which means that a jump gate that's reinforced does not function. You can't jump into it. So we know that any hostiles have to come through the gates coming over, in this particular case, from LTAC-C. So we had scouts up, we saw them coming in, and the first thing they sent in was just a crow to scout us out, see what was going on. And we're shooting this thing. At about 90% haul, a malediction comes in and just instantly beelines it straight for my Kikimora and tackles me down. And within about 3 seconds, he's vaporized. Like, he did not get off a single rep of his nanite repair paste. And I look at the kill mail, and he had no guns. He was just sensor booster, scram, MWD, full tackle, full tank. His whole purpose was to get in and get tackle on the valuable target, which was my Kiki, but he died too quickly. So we knew that at that point, they had a response fleet out. They were sending in their fast tackle to try and hold us down to kill us. But we had this Anzalex, and it was pretty close to dying, so we're like, all right, we'll keep shooting and just wait till they come out again. And sure enough, they did. They came out again, this time with a Caracal and an Arazu. And their Arazu was not damp fit, it was shield fit with Scram and Web, long Scram and Web, both faction. So they come out, and I call immediately for damps on the Caracal and to kill it first, because that's the main threat here. We have bombers on field, They have really low EHP, especially against the Caracal, but the Caracal is a T1 ship, low lock range, you get enough damps on it, it can't lock out past its nose. So we can nuke that thing down extremely quickly. Again, Kikimura, 800 DPS, plus 5 bombers, it's just vaporized. Turn our attention over to the Irazu, which I had held point on, and that thing dies as well. It drops quarter billion Iskin loot between the Irazu and the Caracal together, and then we just finish off the jump bridge, and that was the fight.
After that, it seems like they learned their lesson, because any other time we swung at the jump bridges and got them into reinforce, they put out massive defense fleets. At one point, we drew a 70-man, I want to say Munin fleet, but may not have been Munins, but it was 70 strong to babysit that bridge. They were not having
it. Munins and Hurricanes together. So I think they're dudes who can't fly Munins, they put them in Hurricanes for some reason.
Well, with the range nerf on the Munin, it makes sense, actually. But, yeah, we found that slapping the bridges was a pretty effective thing. That's what we did the first night. So I think I led the first organized fleet of the whole thing. And we didn't actually succeed in the jump bridge kill. In fact, we got forced off of it really effing fast. As soon as we pinged it out, I guess they put a rally fleet together, a response fleet. I want to say it was about 15 man strong to our 8-man fleet, give or take. Much heavier ships. We were in bombers. I was in a rapier. I think we had an interceptor with us, something like that. Could not hold the field. So we teased them a little bit and then basically pinned them to the jump ridge grid. And then at some point they warped off to do some docking shenanigans. I think Artemis, he lost some ships shortly before that. Quad boxing like a champ, which can we all just take a minute to appreciate how insane that is? Quad boxing small gang with destroyers and frigates? That's crazy. But anyway, after your ships had bit the dust, I saw an opportunity of like, well, okay, we can't sit here because we can't move. Like, we can't decloak. Their fleet's going to do stuff. So I was like, all right. I looked at Dotland. There's lots of ratting activity in their pocket. I thought, well, if we can't do this, why don't we roam in and try to catch ratters real fast? So I led my, like, most lightningest fleet ever, snaked in to the entry system of the pocket. It wasn't even off the chains to, like, one of the more dead-end systems. This was right in the entrance. Jumped in, rattlesnake on D, scanned it out really fast, and warped right on top of it. And so jumped the bomber fleet in, and we snagged a rattlesnake kill right under the noses of the response fleet. Just as those guys were filtering into the system, I managed to get our entire fleet back out into space where they couldn't be camped in. All told, I think that decision to like make the kill, or excuse me, decision to go look for the kill to getting the fleet out was like less than 5 minutes.
It was pretty quick. Like, I had lost ships, and so I was heading back to our staging system to grab some more bombers and rejoin the fleet. And in the time it took me to go, like, I think it was 10 jumps total round trip, they had decided to go out, find ratters, found the rattlesnake, killed it, and then had gotten safe again.
And they were hot on our tail after we killed him, so the skedaddling was definitely on offer, and after that we were done. Like, I wasn't going to press our luck. But it still felt good. It was about a billion-isk kill, which is nice. And my host, that was pretty good, but my host highlight is a recent fight we had yesterday afternoon. No, excuse me, 2 days ago in the afternoon. Once again, we're slapping the bridges. Seems to be a great way to get these guys out and about. So we're slapping the bridge. It's me. It's like 4 or 5 stealth bombers. And then Levitain was bringing a Hecate and a Falcon. These guys roam in with a Crow, Osprey Navy issue, and Omen Navy issue. Absolutely deadly to stealth bombers. So we're shooting it. They come in, we gotta cloak up. After a couple minutes, they leave. We decloak again, start shooting again. They come back in, we gotta cloak up. Lave's trying to rearrange his character so we can get the right combination of ships online to actually do something about this. And meanwhile, the timer on the bridge is going down. At this point, we had worked it way... Blah, blah, blah. We had worked it down to, like, I want to say about a third armor, maybe half armor. So we were about 75% the way done, maybe a little bit more. And it had taken us a long time. This was like 2 hours of work. And we're finally light at the end of the tunnel, and these guys come in to defend. And I'm like, oh my god, okay, what can we do here? What can we actually do? I'm trying to think of a battle plan. So I'm like, alright, well, if I've got the Falcon, I'm pretty sure we can do this fight. So we get the Falcon together. The Hecate is coming in. I'm not too worried about the Hecates. So I get, first things first, get all the bombers in the same spot so that I can position my rapier to cover them. Obviously, as soon as the bombers decloak, the Osprey Navy issue and the Omen Navy issue are going to try to charge them and get points and kill them all. My plan is to web down the Osprey Navy issue, and then the Falcon will do its best to jam out their fleet so we don't lose any bombers in the process. This actually works pretty well, except one of the bombers landed nearly at zero, and we had to pull the trigger on this slightly before I was ready. But it all kind of worked out. So he lands uncloaked pretty close to them. Sure enough, the Osprey Navy couldn't take that fight fast enough. The Crow comes in, the Omen Navy comes in, I decloak. Webb's right on the Osprey Navy issue. That application was perfect. Jams go out to their entire fleet. The Osprey Navy is thoroughly screwed. He had charged away from the jump ridge. There was no way for him to get back, double web. The Omen Navy, as soon as the Osprey went to about, I just about lost its shields, the Omen Navy thought better of it and jumped through the jump ridge out to the other side. The Crow warped off shortly after we killed the Osprey. No bombers died in the making of this kill mail. Just a minor miracle, factoring in cloak delays and all that sort of stuff. I was really worried about that bomber that landed at zero. I thought for sure he was going to die, but he managed to make it out. The Crow decided to be cheeky and go for one of the bombers later, but his navigation path brought him right into me as I had recloaked and was waiting, you know, for something else to happen. So as he's chasing this bomber, he's actually running right into me. So I decloak again, point webs. It was pretty close. He tried to turn at the last second, but he just couldn't pull it off. I had overheated and I had nailed him. And once I had the webs on him, the Hecate caught up with him, and that was it for him. So we got the Osprey Navy, we got the Crow, and meanwhile, I'm looking back at the jump bridge. Time's ticking down. 50 seconds left. I'm like, guys, shoot the bridge. Like, Alec, don't you want us to blow up the wrecks? No. Bridge. So put everybody on shooting the jump bridge. And with 50 seconds to spare, after almost 3 hours of work, we managed to get it down. We didn't actually kill it afterward, unfortunately, but that was a pretty hard-won fight. I enjoyed it. The planning of it was really fun. The fact that it executed pretty much exactly like I had it mapped out in my head was really fun. And mission accomplished on that jump bridge. Just by the skin of my nose.
Awesome fight.
Yeah, super cool. Now, while we're up in Fate, it is important to mention for the audience the wider context of what is going on in the North right now. We've been touching on it a little bit through previous broadcasts, but now that we're up here, I think it's a lot clearer what is going on. You've got PanFam versus Guardians of the Galaxy. The two big northern coalitions are clashing over territory up in the north, focusing mostly on like Branch Tenal, kind of. And in that effort, there's southern powers are kind of proxy supporting each side. So you've got Test coming up lightly supporting PanFam, and you've got Imperium coming up more heavily supporting Guardians of the Galaxy.
It's worth noting. With the support from the Imperium, first it was just the Initiative who were there to support Guardians of the Galaxy, but more recently a SIG, so not the entire Imperium, not a corp, but it's a special interest group is what they call it. Basically, anybody can join with some restrictions. And they sent one up, I believe this one's led by Asher, or at least he's an active FC, and its whole purpose is to test out experimental fleet doctrines and also like to help their strategic allies. So they come up here, and it's fantastic because they're flying like cruise foons and heavy missile sacrileges and all sorts of other just weird stuff you don't see that's not the meta, because they're explicitly trying to figure out, okay, what's the meta going to be next? And so it's always fun to see what those guys undocking.
Unironically, I'm a little excited about heavy missile sacks. I've been taking a look at them in Pypha, and with the buff to DPS, they're actually pretty competitive looking.
Yeah, they were competitive with Serbs even like before the buff to HMLs. But T3s in their old state, just like a Proteus fleet could warp on top of the Sacrileges, and they were too slow to get out of scram range, so you could tackle down pretty quick. Similarly, their speed relative to Munins and things like that made them non-viable. But now that you have increased application, Munins have lower range, and you can and T3s have been nerfed such that their scram, you aren't worried about a Proteus fleet landing on you at zero. The speed isn't an issue, and the application of the damage are really nice.
Yeah, I'd love to try that sometime.
Plus, you have 3 EWAR slots. I think that's the biggest thing compared to Munins or Eagles or anything like that, is you have 3 possibly TDs if you're fighting Munins and Eagles. You could have 3 MGEs or MGDs if you're fighting other Sacrileges or something. Even like if you run up against an RD Macarial fleet, throw some TDs on there, damps, jams, anything like that. You've got 3 spare mid slots for EWAR and tons of CPU to work with.
You could even enhance your own range if you just really want to kite it out, maybe as a third party type doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's with full flight of medium drones.
Yeah, that is also a huge boon as well. So if you get run over by Sabres or Scepters trying to tackle you, those drones are great for shaking that off.
Yeah, lots of replacements. Very cool. So it's neat. We've talked a little bit about Guardians of the Galaxy's political situation up in the north. I think it bears a refresher because I think it's interesting to talk about it and the way this is playing out. We've been talking about them on the show mostly in terms of political isolation. After the last war, they took a peace deal from the Imperium, and it kind of left their allies in Panfam a little disgruntled, and Imperium didn't respect them either. They got like an exorbitant price to stop rolling their shit. So they kind of had this weird situation where none of the other coalitions really respected or valued them very highly, but they themselves had primo space and were able to put a lot of money into their own military. So they're now in a position where PanFam is going up against them. They're clearly on the back foot from this. I think they're relying very heavily on Imperium support to stay in that fight. It remains to be seen, you know, if it comes down to dropping the big toys, which I know they've invested a lot in, you know, who might come out on that. But PanFam has a huge super fleet too.
Yeah, and so far, PanFam has been using that super capital fleet almost with impunity, consistently. In fact, they're being called PandaFam now because Fraternity is a major part of why PanFam has had so much success, because now they're able to compete on the AUTZ, where previously Sort Dragon, Dead Coalition, they had sort of the monopoly on the AUTZ. That's where all the AUTZ pilots were. Now with Fraternity joining up with PanFam, forming PandaFam, they have an ability to compete in that time zone. And even in AUTZ, it seems like PandaFam can form, if not outform, Dead Coalition in terms of super capitals that we've seen so far. We did have one fight that people thought maybe this is going to be where everything hits the fan. It was over a Keepstar in Rager Regiment. It was owned by Rager Regiment out in Teenal, and it was previously a staging Keepstar for them. And the Imperium, or pardon me, PandaFam formed up all their Titans and Supers and everything and just basically dropped the hammer on it. And Dead Coalition did not respond. So it definitely seems like, at the very least, Deadco is not willing to put their super fleet on the line against PandaFam.
But at the same time, they're not rolling over either. They are continuing to be in this fight and apply pressure and fight back and contest timers, except for that one, really. You know, they're in it. They're not, you know, completely withdrawing. We're not seeing like a lot of Northern Wars recently of just a one-sided stomp, where the losing side pulls out almost immediately or sues for peace almost immediately. They are game, although you've got to wonder what the I mean, obviously, they have their intelligence network. PandaFam's going to have their intelligence network. I'm sure they knew what they could form versus what Pan could form. I'm sure that math was done. You don't get to be an FC at that level and be a coalition at that level without that kind of resource and that kind of planning. But at the same time, if you're defending a Keepstar, they would presume that is like your best home field advantage possible. If you didn't feel good about dropping your primary time zone's heavy ships on a friendly Keepstar on its final timer, one would have to wonder under what circumstances they would consider doing it.
Well, there's also the wrinkle of that this war is kind of happening on multiple fronts now. Our contract in Fade notwithstanding, because Ranger Regiment is a part of this, like us disrupting Fade sort of impacts this war. Excluding that, you've also got who have recently deployed, at least some portion of them have deployed up finally to the north. And one of the FCs from Pandemic Legion, DJ, I forget his name and I feel bad, was recently on the Sunday show on TIS just this week. And he was talking about how they've started making significant progress in terms of showing the sovereignty in Teenal, mainly because Test and Legacy have deployed up and they have been putting pressure on the Sov in Declan. So whenever there are timers happening in Teenal, there are also timers happening in Declan. And of course, Dead Coalition main staging is in Declan. That's where Darkness is. That's where they're basically their fortress is. And so they will focus and prioritize the timers in Declan over timers and other assets out in Teenal, which is effectively farming space, from my understanding. And specifically, the pressure from Tess has been such that if you're familiar with the history surrounding the system of VFK and VFK by May or VFK by Christmas, what have you, Tess Alliance recently destroyed and captured the iHub in VFK in Declan. It's pretty nuts.
That is pretty nuts. And I can definitely see why that would be a strategy for GOTG, especially with the short range of supercaps. So they don't have to go multiple regions to defend stuff. Then, you know, why would you do that when you have stuff that needs defending at home? But if they're also failing on that front, that's got to be concerning.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot that could happen. Pandemic Legion, Fraternity, these are not, like, invulnerable alliances. Everyone can make mistakes. Imperium could always decide to deploy more strongly, not necessarily to out of any love for Guardians of the Galaxy, but simply to spite PanFam to give their own members content or to maintain a kind of balance of power of sorts. You could also see Imperium decide to strike in the south and maybe force Tess to redeploy back to save their homeland. That could also be a thing. So there are a lot of different ways this could play out, but certainly if it continues as it is, the pressure is closing around GOTG. They will have some advantages of shorter supply lines as things get closer and closer to Declan, but you know, then also have to fight that morale and momentum swing as well if they get pushed back to that point without really challenging.
Yeah, if they're getting pushed back into Declan, you've got to imagine all the momentum that's building up on the PandaFam side. Morale is high. They've been getting lots of kill mills, faction fortizars, keep stars. All these things are dying. Taking Sov, they're definitely coming in there with some great momentum and great morale if it is going to be a slog for Declan.
We will continue to report as this develops. The other thing we really wanted to talk about, and I kind of put this out without discussing it on the show just for timing reasons, and also we had tons of content, but the Black Mark Awards, bringing it back. It's been quite a while since the Black Mark Awards have been a thing. For those of you who have been tuning into the podcast and have become fans of ours in the past 2 to 3 years, this is our year-end awards program. You kind of think of it like the Oscars, the Academy. Same idea, Golden Globe-y type stuff. But for Eve. And prior, the way the Black Marks works is we had a number of categories. I and the hosts of the show would, you know, put together some nominations, and we'd put it out to the members of Noir and maybe a few guests and a few really loyal listeners, and they would get to vote. This year, we decided to take it a little bit bigger and basically moved everything out one layer. So the nomination was done by declarations of war guests and NOR members, who were basically like podcast super fans, or at least I hope they are. and of course, your loyal hosts. And then once we got the top 3 to 4 nominees for every category, I, for the first time in the history of the podcast, put the voting out to the public. And I will include a link to the vote in the notes of this episode. So if you want to get your vote in under the wire, come check out the show notes for this show. The link will be in there. But I thought it might be cool to go over the categories this year and some of our nominees.
I would like to say I've got a bit of a chip on my shoulder with regards to the Black Mark Awards. So when I first joined Noir, it was back in the MC days, and unfortunately it was just before Alec left. And when Alec left, the Black Mark Awards also disappeared. But for the majority of my first year in Noir, I was gunning hard for the Rookie of the Year Black Mark Awards. I was a fan of the show. I wanted that award. It was mine. Like, I was FCing, I was doing Logie, I'd gotten promoted to a director shortly after Alec left, and then Black Marks didn't happen. Fast forward a couple years, Black Mark is back, and guess who is not in a single category?
Oh, that sucks, Artemis. You almost certainly would have won that year too, wouldn't you?
Fun times. All right, let's get into the nominations now that my salt has been poured on the table.
Well, let's start, I guess, with the Rookie of the Year, since who is the Rookie of the Year? We've got 3. Robert Mason from our EU time zone, Andy Astronaut, who's been on the show, he's one of our directors, and Krav Sandro, one of our more active FCs that has come in this year. But it's not just Noir stuff. Artemis, why don't you take us through the FC of the Year?
Yeah, so we have 4 different nominations for this. We've got Makula Zaria, who, for the record, I have no idea who this person is.
Should Makalu. I know who this person is?
Makalu? Who's Makalu?
You don't know Makalu?
No, I've never heard this name.
He's old school.
Well, there's your problem. This is the 2019 Black Mark Awards, not the old school Black Mark Awards. In any case, we've also got Ron USMC, a prolific podcaster and streamer and personality from Test Alliance Please Ignore. We've got Pando from The Initiative and of Stuka Flame. And then we've got Seto, former member of Legacy Coalition and now a member of Wrecking Crew.
Have you heard Makalu Cries, the song?
No.
I'll put that in the show notes too. It's one of Sindel Pelion's best.
I don't know who that is.
Oh my god. You need to get cultured, man. I don't know what to tell you. We've got Doctrine of the Year. Obviously, this would not go to a person necessarily, but what doctrines defined 2019? We've got Cormorants, RR Lashax, 100MN Drekovix, and the Stuka Fleet. Very interesting category.
We're not participating or making any claims or suggestions with regards to the current dispute over the name of the fleet, which combines Afterburning Bombers and MJD Desis.
I've never heard it referred to anything else than the Stuka.
Alec, our legal team, says that we're not making any statements. Granting opinions with regards to the current dispute over the name of the fleet.
Okay. If there was going to be a dispute, maybe they should dispute it more often. Take us through game update.
Yeah, so best game update of the year. This is focused more on mechanics and changes rather than like what CCP called their particular updates or patches or what have you. So we've got 3 options here. We've got the blackout, even though it's technically gone now, but we're going to say the change we're talking about here is when the blackout was instituted, while it was happening. Removing the blackout is not an option because obviously that was a terrible idea. CCP, please bring it back. Moving on, we've got the warp speed changes. So this is where everything, cruisers and up, got to warp a little bit faster. And then we also have the Sino changes.
And of course, with CCP making features and game updates, then we have, of course, the Dev of the Year category. Now, to be clear, this was open to anyone that was a CCP dev in the past year. Obviously, several big names left this year. That was a huge deal. So it was available to them even if they weren't currently working at the end of the year. So we have three nominees: CCP Rise, CCP Over, and CCP Falcon.
Who is CCP Over? What do they do?
Really?
Really?
I believe that's the CEO, is it not?
Helmar?
Yeah. Isn't
Helmar
that his?
Is CCP Helmar.
No, this is Nathan Richardson, sorry, the executive guy.
Ah, okay.
What's Helmar's character name? He has one.
Helmar. His actual name is Hilmar. His CCP name is Helmar.
Ah. Best CSM rep. We've got... Well,
go for it. Okay, I got it. We're doing this.
We've got to do the alternating thing. It's working
Dunk
out.
Dinkle, Exuki Z, and Olmeca Gold.
I'm looking at the results here. Very competitive category. I'm not going to give any hints as to who is coming out on top, but definitely a fairly even split, I would say.
Yeah, like each of the nominees have their own sort of extra flavor that boosts them up. So you've got Dunk Dinkle. He's a well-known Eve personality, does a lot of stuff, does the Brave Not a Soda videos constantly or consistently. He also has been doing the weekly blog, which if you haven't seen it, definitely go check out his blog about the CSM, because they are fantastic. Gives you a little bit of insight into the CSM and also more insight into his own personal thinking, plus some updates with regards to his beekeeping, which is always fun. Then we've got Exuki, who is, of course, the only wormhole representative on the CSM. So he lives in wormhole space. He's the only guy doing that thing as his focus. He also notably did the whole presentation where he went into a session at a CSM summit and basically said, okay, CCP, this is how wormholes work, just FYI. And he released that thing to the public, which is pretty cool to look through. So if you'd like to learn a bit about wormholes and specifically how they work nowadays, go look up his presentation. And then you've also got Olmeca Gold, who was considered to be a dark horse running into the election, but just had an outstanding finish. Was he second place just behind Aerith? I forget which position he finished in the results, but he was phenomenally popular, mostly due, I think, to his unique playstyle. He does a lot of whaling, a lot of multi-boxing, and he also released a fantastic documentary-esque video prior to the election, which was well-received by the community.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't. I'm not going to download the file to figure out the exact breakdowns, but he was very highly ranked. I don't know that he was second, but he could have been. I don't know that he was a dark horse.
He was secured within the first round, if memory serves.
Okay. I don't know that he was a dark horse necessarily. I figured he would get in because he kind of got all the small gang vote behind him, and he also put out some really impressive videos about the whaling he was doing and various methods to attack workable drones and stuff like that. Just really made himself very visible with highly quality content, had opinions and views that a lot of small gang folks could get behind, but I definitely didn't expect him to do as well as he did.
Incredibly overpowered with their projection, with hog guns, with fighters not being nerfed. So small gang was at effectively an all-time low when he was running. So there was a not insignificant question of, are all the small gamers, small gangers even still involved with the community? Are they going to vote for the CSM? Do they even still have a sub running?
Mm-hmm.
So that was my concern, why I had him very solidly in the dark horse category, because he could make it, but his following very well just could not be engaged with the game right now because of its current state.
Yeah, fair point.
Speaking in the past, of course.
Declarations of War Best Guest. Obviously a very personal category for people. We've got Andy Astronaut from Noir, Cable Uta, Yin Tan, and the interminable Brisk Rubal. Another highly competitive category, I will say. So if one of these guys jumped out to you as one of our best guests of 2019, hit the show notes, get your votes in, and make sure that your views are counted. That's an extremely competitive category. It could really go either way at this point.
Indeed.
I mean, the vote, like, for real, the vote margins are as close as you could imagine. Rookie of the Year, we talked about. But what, Artemis, the Noir MVP, this is our most valuable all-around pilot. Could be from Rookie of the Year is just for the new guys. This is anybody that's currently active in the Noir roster.
Yep, so we have for this. One is Zanzibar, the other one is Andy Astronaut, and the third is Zahn Soul. Now, Andy and Zahn are both directors with the Noir, Andy being a USTZ, somewhat EU, because he's awake at that time, but at work usually. And then Zahn is AUTZ focused. Zanzibar, I think, is definitely the dark horse in this particular race, if you just don't look at the voting results, because he is not a director, to my knowledge. Is he a director?
He's not a director, nor is he an active FC.
Yeah, so he's just a cool dude.
Yeah, very popular amongst his folks, and he's a kick-ass pilot for sure. But, you know, not like not a real visible guy necessarily, but does a lot behind the scenes for people. And I think he helps with some logistics and stuff, is kind of a mentory figure for a few people. So definitely cool dude. Really great to see him represented here in the MVP poll.
And that's the nice thing about the MVP is it's not just like Rookie of the Year, where it's, you know, who's the best rookie for various reasons. It's not who's the best FC in Noir. It's not the best logistics guy. It's a, like, who is the most valuable to us as a corporation? Sometimes that's a director. Sometimes that's an FC. Sometimes that's a jump freighter pilot. Sometimes it's just the dude who keeps the culture in a positive light.
That's never Alec. Sad face. No.
It says okay. Most valuable player, not most valuable brony.
Oh, ho, ho. Dehumanizing. Cool, I can dig it. So that's the nominees for this year's awards. Please vote. The winners of the awards, you can definitely expect to see a couple of them making return visits here on Declarations of War. And for those where it's possible, we'll give them an in-game award. Obviously, corp medals can't be given outside the corp, but for any Noir members that may win, they'll get their little medal. We can pin it on them.
Good stuff.
And, we're kind of getting long in the show here, so we're going to close it out. I just want to do a couple shout-outs real quick. Lady Scarlet, Gobbins, Matterall, all the wonderful people I met at the EVE SoCal meetups over the past few months, including some fans of the show. This one guy, I met him on Saturday about 2 days ago. He'd been listening for years and recognized me through the voice. Like, the name didn't register, the corp didn't register, but apparently the voice hit him. And it's so cool to meet fans of the podcast at these EVE meetups, at FanFest, at EVE Vegas. It's really cool. So if you are a fan of the show and you're going to one of those type things and you see me or hear me, as the case might be, please come up and say hi. Absolutely love it. It's one of the coolest things on the planet Earth. So I just want to thank everybody there. There are too many people to even remember. There's like 8 or 10 people at the meetup, so I'm not going to remember everybody's name, but I really enjoyed hanging out with them, and it's been such a privilege to get to know everybody in the Southern California area. Really vibrant EVE community down here, and it's very exciting.
My shout-out goes to Levitain for being active in-game again. He's not only a great co-host while he had the time to do the show, but he is also a phenomenal pilot. Another heavy multi-boxer like myself, he also does 4 to 5 clients at a time. But unlike me, where I use various tricks to minimize the amount of actions I have to take per account, he's just like, nope, I'm going to fly whatever is the most valuable to this fleet and stack them up. So he will be the fleet commander and the combat prober and the scepter pilot and the falcon pilot, just all at the same time. And he does it extremely well, and it's incredibly impressive if you ever get to experience it. So welcome back, Lave. I'm glad you've got time to play again.
I've gotten my multi-boxing up to the point where I can have a scout alt that's stationary on one screen while I'm playing on the front screen.
Nice. Good work. That's how you start.
Yeah, I'm getting there. It's definitely an improvement from the last attempt. I tried bringing an electronic warfare support frigate on the secondary character, but as soon as the fight started, I forgot about it entirely, and it just sat on a gate in low sec, stationary. I didn't jump it, didn't warp anywhere, and miraculously it survived the entire experience.
Wow.
Yep, I was in the zone, I was FC, and I was doing my thing, and I just totally forgot about it. And then after things were going, I like noticed I had another Eve client up on the other monitor. It's like, huh. Oh, shit. Yeah, I better get off that gate.
I would say, like, just like Kitsune and orbit at 100, but you got to remember to jump it into the fight or so. You still yes. have a few steps to go.
It wasn't even that. It was a target painter vigil. Like, I figured I'd just throw painters on stuff. I wouldn't really have to worry about any kind of micromanagement. But again, you must be in the system for that to even happen. And there was a failure of process.
We should add a category next year to be the most improved noir pilot. And we'll see if Alec can make his way up there.
Ooh, actually, that's a really good idea. I like that, most improved. Yeah, we can do that. I'm digging it.
Fair enough.
So that's it, guys. Head to declarationsofwar.com. Check out the show notes for this show. Make sure you vote in the Black Mark Awards. This is your first ever opportunity to do so. We've already had tons of responses for this poll, but it needs your vote. So go out there and check it out. We will do the results on the next show. And that's it, guys. If you're looking to come join us out in Nullsec, as we keep the small gang mercenary spirit alive, join CafeNoir.com in-game for more info on how to join up with us. Or you can always message me or Artemis directly about recruitment information. Wherever you are, whoever you're flying with, good hunting, listeners.